It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea. When the world was a
time of this and that, I was young, didn't know the whole. We talked a lot of Texans in hour one. You want to get your thoughts on them or anything else? It's 713-780-3776. Sean and I were discussing distribution of snaps last night because it struck us as odd that Jalen Knoll, who had popped as a returner earlier in the year, had now given that over, at least punt returning, over to Braxton Berrios, who at a point was an all-pro punt returner, but that point was when he was with the Jets a couple teams ago. Okay, you want to make Braxton Berrios your punt returner? Fine, I guess, even though Knoll had shown he's very capable of returning kicks, or at least punts.
Yeah, like we have our like issues with it, but it's
fine.
Defensible.
Berrios has been a good special teamer in the past. You want to do that. What I do have a problem with is Braxton Berrios playing more offensive snaps last night than Knoll. Knoll played 33, Berrios played 36. Braxton Berrios has not been a real contributing wide receiver for years now. Even in his time with the Dolphins, of course, there's Waddle and Hill. But he wasn't a guy that they looked to. He may make a catch a game. There's no reason he should be playing the number of snaps he played. Yes, I know Nico got hurt. Did they enter the game with only four receivers so he had to get snaps? Because you look at it, it was Hutchinson, Nico, Higgins, and Knoll, and Berrios. So they entered it with five, and they left it with four because of the concussion to Nico, I guess. But playing more snaps than Knoll, who was the only one, particularly after Nico went out, that had any juice, seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
Look, personnel, I'm sure they had their issues when Nico got hurt. So Braxton Berrios' snap count had to go up. But I did notice him earlier in the game. I'm like, what's going on out there? And, of course, we're giving them the punt return stuff, fine. But when I watch Knoll make plays against the Bucks, and then I watch Braxton Berrios fall face first into the 50-yard line for no reason, I don't know why that's a thing either. When you are a team who has problems scoring points, unless they just forgot because they put up points against the Ravens and the Titans,
they think
just fine. They must have forgotten the first 3 weeks of the season where they weren't able to score touchdowns. You need guys who can create explosive plays. So put Knoll on the field more often, and maybe you get better results than the Braxton Berrios experience with punt returns.
Yeah, just like even in the like the most like dumbed down, like, hey, just let's try to save our jobs of just like, hey, what would be more important for us if Jalen Knoll turns out to be awesome or if Braxton Berrios is a serviceable third receiver and punt returner? Like, what is actually the higher outcome? Like, the only receiver other than Nico Collins really to show any flashes all season, and they still are just flashes with Knoll, but the only guy is Knoll. Like, that's it. He's the only guy who seems to have juice on the offense.
He's shown enough flashes that I'm no longer calling him Noel.
Yeah.
I know his last name is Knoll, and I will call him Knoll because I've been able to say his name and recognize him enough as a guy who may have something.
Honestly, coming into the season, he was probably third on our Iowa State receiver power rankings. Now he's number one.
Behind Hutchinson and Higgins, and now he's number one.
So he's the best Iowa State player on this team. I don't understand why he's getting benched but having
splitting enough of the snaps.
Any snaps whatsoever being taken away from Knoll and given to Berrios is like crazy, and especially out of a bye week where normally that's when after a bye week, like, oh, the rookie, normally it's receivers, but sometimes it's running back or defensive player. Like, after the bye week, oh, they get a little bit of uptick in their usage because they, you know, an extra week of learning the system. Coaches feel more comfortable giving them more opportunities. Like, why are the Texans doing the opposite of that?
No, Berrios has now worked himself to the spot where he's more comfortable with the offense.
Yeah,
so let's run him out there.
Yeah, and I mean, you put that in with the not just the play calls on the third and fourth and shorts, but also like who they are giving the ball to and who they are running behind in those play calls. It's just like, did these guys, it just feels like they don't, like they get the layups wrong. Like they're not even putting themselves in position to like fluke into a successful offense. Like they are actively hampering their any chances to be effective on offense.
Like he, I mean Berrios had been inactive all season. So the first time they got a chance to,
they're like, finally
see him, they ran him out there for 30 plus plays for whatever reason. He hasn't been an effective wide receiver.
What's his career high in receiving yards for a season?
Back in 2021, he had 431 yards on a bad Jets team that had Zach Wilson playing quarterback.
What are we doing, guys?
I don't know.
Like, just like, what? Like, why? Why is this guy a part of the offense?
Because they signed him in the offseason, I guess.
This offseason, where, like, this guy is probably just a punt
returner. Yeah, we were one, and yeah, people like Braxton Berrios. Like, well, if a punt returner, I guess. But then you draft a guy who is,
and he's pretty
is
good
capable
at it,
of that. And now you get Braxton.
I even like Smith, who they have out there.
Tremont Smith on kicker. Yeah, he's consistently getting it past the 30-yard line against at least last night. But, yeah, let's give the guy you signed in free agency to a very small deal.
How old is Braxton Berrios?
He's been in the league since 19.
Okay,
he's 30 years old.
Yeah.
He turned 30 in this month, but
so. Yeah. Any chance to give a 30-year-old whose career high is 400 yards receiving instead of a rookie, the Iowa State rookie that looks good? I'm not even saying the Iowa State rookie that's still pretty speculative in Higgins.
Questions everywhere about
it's like
personnel again, moves.
Even like the small things they get wrong, like.
Should be easy.
Yeah, we talk about
the young player
the
we drafted on the second day should be playing.
Yeah, like the penalties, the all this stuff, like it's very big, you know. Even like the offensive line, it's like they kind of had to make do. Nick Caceres said, like, he basically said, well, we did go after bigger guys. These are just the guys we got. Mm-hmm. He didn't say it quite as dismissive as that, but in kind of defending himself and being like, no, I obviously know that there are better
offensive
line available.
He was asked a question about not getting, I guess, higher profile names.
These are the guys we got.
Yeah, we went after guys. You just wouldn't know about it, but we had interest in other guys, and this is just how it felt. So he wasn't focused directly on getting Ed Ingram here as quickly as possible.
Again,
it's just how it went.
Caserio translator. I know these guys stink. Like, you don't think I don't know these guys stink? But that's
I had to make moves, and this is who I landed on.
Now I could ask, like, wait, why could you only get guys who stink? Why'd you draft a receiver before an offensive lineman?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. Again, when drafting for BPA and not need goes wrong, give you the Houston Texans.
Yeah, Gray Zabel's on the other side, a guy they could have gone after.
Yeah. The Lions rookie guard, Ratledge,
who gets
love every national game they play.
Yeah, now Gray Zabel went in the first round, so they had the trade up. But and they traded out of the first round, we believe, because they missed out on – who was the player who – I think was the Vikings who traded up to get a guy? I forgot who it was. But there was a belief that they were going to get an offensive lineman, and then a trade was made to snake the guy away from them. So they got a maybe caught – as you say, with their pants down, and someone beat him out for a pick. Let me look at it. I believe it was Donovan Jackson. That was the guard that people believe they wanted. The Vikings traded up to get him, and then they traded down, and they wound up with, Ursary.
Higgins and Ursary.
And Ursary did not bathe himself in glory last night. No one on that offensive line did. All right. It's a lot of Texan stuff. If you want to join us. And still want to talk about him. Maybe see some of the. Oh, what? Who could they have drafted?
Elijah Arroyo.
Well,
that guy was pretty good last night.
I think Dalton Schultz was fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I won't crush them for not taking a tight end, although they didn't expect their tight end injuries to pop up like they did. So I won't kill them for that. But the offensive line was a major problem. It remains that against anyone who can actually play defense. And we've seen that happen over the course of the first. Now 7 weeks of the season. So we talk Texans. We can still talk them. But when we come back, we'll do some Rockets because there was some news that came out of maybe not the Rockets, but just the deal didn't get done. That was reported to be getting done. And now we can ask some questions. And we now know what the Rockets starting lineup will be. It'll be a giant one where Amen Thompson's the smallest player in your starting lineup. So we'll give you the rundown of that. And the news regarding a Rocket core player who may be looking to head elsewhere after the season. We'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show. That's kind of full of sports, but also filled with a lot of movie talk. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea and Sean Mapes.
That's just Michael getting a shout out to his own segment at 11:30. That's when all the movie talk happens on Fridays. Michael Carroll, the host of Comicast. Want to clean something up. The Vikings didn't trade up. They stayed at 24, but they did take Donovan Jackson, a player the Texans, at least people thought the Texans wanted, and they traded out of the first round. After that, Vikings remained in their spot and got their guy. All right, let's get to the Rockets. Tari Eason was reportedly going to sign an extension with the Rockets before the 5 p.m. deadline, and we joked about, why hasn't this been done? Why are they waiting to the final day to make this announcement? Are they looking to grab a spot in the news cycle? Turns out no, they could not agree. And because the Rockets do negotiate these deals as opposed to just handing out as much cash as they possibly can, it's almost like their version of arbitration, where they will talk about the value of the player, what they expect of him, and what he has done, and figure out the money. And the Rockets' evaluation of Tari Eason differed from his representation, his representation's evaluation, and certainly the player himself's evaluation, and they can't come to a deal, which means Tari Eason will enter restricted free agency next year. The pie in the sky, kumbaya perspective was Kevin Durant's taking less to give the Rockets the space to fit Tari Eason under the second apron and still give him a deal that he would like. Turns out, whatever the deal or offer was, wasn't to Tari Eason's liking. And we do have to take into account what Tari Eason's little breadcrumbs have been all offseason, at least when he had media availability. When first we had him being upset about not being a top 100 player, you could just think, hey, that's just a player believing he's better than some of the guys on the list, and that certainly plays a part. But that's also another way to evaluate a player and start to look at some of your peers and where they're ranked and what type of money they're getting. And then we hear Tari Eason talk about wanting a bigger role, wanting to show what he's capable of. Maybe we should have put the pieces together and thought to ourselves, maybe the negotiations aren't going the way he wants when he talks about a bigger role and how he wants to be a guy who gets plays run for him from time to time. I wonder if that was one of the sticking points. Well, we don't really run plays for you. You're not really a focal point of our offense. So how can we justify this or this? I'm speculating on that part, but I'm not speculating on what he discussed publicly. He wanted a bigger role. And if you want a bigger role on this Rockets team, where are you going to get it? When you have Amen Thompson and Kevin Durant and Alperen Şengün for this year with no Fred VanVleet, where's the bigger role going to come from? Is he going to lead a bench unit? Are they just going to put the ball in Tari Eason's hands and lead the bench unit? Doesn't seem likely. I'm sure you'll see a traditional guard in that spot because Reed Sheppard will get his minutes coming off the bench this season. So it did seem a little weird that not only was the deal late in the making, but it was also expected to get done considering what the player had discussed. And maybe Tari Eason doesn't see a way forward in a role that he wants here with Houston. Can he carve that out this season? Does he need to start? We always talk about it matters if you close more than start and how many minutes you play. But some guys,
perception
as a young player, the status of starting and coming off the bench is important. And you understand a player who believes, I'm just as talented as Jabari Smith, and you gave him money, and he's starting. I think I'm capable of starting. Of course, the pushback is, we got the call from Julian this morning, the man doesn't play back-to-backs. They're managing the minutes of a 20-something-year-old. What are we talking about? How can you get paid that? And maybe that was part of the Rockets' pushback. You want what? When we have to take into account whether you're capable of playing 30-plus minutes a night in back-to-back situations. So we stand, certainly with speculation, but we know this. Tari Eason will be a restricted free agent next season. And the Rockets, as far as his future here with the team, I won't call it trouble, but there is a little sticky situation if a team decides, hey, we know you don't want to operate above the second apron.
Yeah.
If we give him, even if it's a descending salary where it starts higher, to start his contract, but descends as he goes forward. But just to stick it to you, what's it? You're about $25 million under the second apron. Let's start Tari at 26. Now what do you want to do? Yeah. Now what do you want to do? Do you want to give a player who has – maybe he plays the 70 games that I'm sure the Rockets and he would love this year. Maybe he's no longer a injury management guy. But he's still coming off the bench, and he is a good player for you, but he's not part of your top five. Do you want to give a guy that type of money that's going to put you in the second apron? We'll see how much you love him. So that's where they land now, that a team can come in, and maybe if Easton's open to it, we'll give you 27 to start. 27, and then we'll see what the Rockets want to do with you. This is what happens when you don't get a deal done. And we've applauded them for getting deals done and on their terms. I guess you can't be 100%, particularly yeah. with the guy who believes he's got more in his bag than what he's able to show right now.
Yeah, and there's still, like, I guess, like, the opportunity that they could work something out, but that almost, like you said, it almost has to be like Tari's and has an underwhelming season so that no team really wants to give him the, like, Daryl Morey style poison pill contract where it's like, I'm going to give this restricted free agent a poison pill contract, a contract where one of the years is just so ridiculous that you just cannot sign him. You cannot bring back Omer Asik if you wanted. Chicago, right? Was it Chicago? I forgot if it was Chicago, then Rockets, or Rockets, then Chicago for Omer Asik. Sound off in the comments. But there is like the element of Amin Thompson was backing up Jabari Smith until Jabari Smith missed a month, and he made the most of that opportunity. Like, if you're Tari's, and like, there still is that chance that, hey, you know, in March, one of the start, you know, Kevin Durant misses 15 games, 20 games towards the end of the season, and Tari's and has a similar effect of in the starting lineup. That is something where if I'm Tari's, and yeah, probably do roll the dice and like, maybe I am talked about or viewed as a much more key piece. You know, probably won't be on the Rockets. Although the Rockets could still like make a trade, you know, get off some salary to sign him
if they want.
So good that they can't let him go.
Sure.
But it would just make it hard. Like, you'd have to let go of somebody that makes a decent amount of money to make that happen. So, yeah, I think this is ultimately what made the most sense overall. It's just the buzz or the report. Actually, it's not even buzz.
It was just a report.
It was a Shams Charania report that it was likely he was. That was the part that was throwing us off.
Yeah.
Like, was the, like, wait, why?
I know The Athletic did it. I don't know if maybe Shams did it. I think okay. It was The Athletic. Okay. David Aldridge and another guy reported that they expected a deal to get done. Turns out they were incorrect on that.
Wrong.
They were incorrect. And Tari Eason will play out the year and then enter restrictive free agency. Usually guys sign with their teams because they're in a spot, particularly over the course of this past offseason. Not a lot of money was available.
Yeah.
And while it took a while and it hampered the Warriors in making the smaller moves that they were looking to make, like bringing Al Horford, they eventually got that done. They did get Kuminga on a 2-year deal. Josh Giddey got his money from the Bulls. The guy who said, I'll trust myself, was Cam Thomas. He thought he should be in the $30 million range. He looked around the league at all the other shooting guards. He thought he should be making that money. Of course, the other thing that went on this offseason were shooting guards being traded away. Like the Anthony Simonses of the world got traded to the Celtics. The Blazers said, we don't think we should be paying you for your particular skill set.
Yeah. I mean,
for who we are.
They also have Scoot Henderson.
And they have all these other guys. Shaden Sharp.
Drew Holiday. Shaden Sharp.
And the Dame recovering.
They acquired Dame, who's going to be out this year. But
they're on the cap.
Yeah, there was like a position like bottleneck that happened there.
Yeah.
Of just being able to play all these guys.
One-way twos.
Norm Powell got traded too. Like just,
yeah, another one of those guys who's up for a new deal at the end of the year. So all the one-way twos who only give you scoring and not much else, they're being undervalued, their value's just decreased. And that's why people looked around the league and said, who's giving Cam Thomas that money?
Yeah.
So he decided, I'm not taking your deal, Nets. I'm not I'm not signing. I'll take the qualifying offer and then enter unrestricted free agency in the next year, and we'll see what I'm capable of.
I do wonder what Tari, because he's not really a good comp. Like, he's not really a Cam Thomas comp.
He's a, you would call him. He's not as good of an offensive player, but defensive wing. But he's a better. He's a defensive wing. I think one of the issues for Tari,
he can give you something on offense, but he's more of a defensive.
And he is telling us he's far more capable to give more. He just doesn't get the opportunity. He is in a spot where the Rockets are strong. Well, maybe. Maybe that's the best comp.
Does Kuminga play defense?
Maybe that's the best comp. A guy who believes he can't showcase all he's worth because Kuminga thinks he's a star. And that's one of the pushbacks between him and the Warriors. We've talked about how the fit doesn't work.
Yeah. I'm sure. But, and Kuminga would get, like, DMPs in big games. So, like,
Tari healthy doesn't get DMPs.
Yeah. It's a little bit. It's not perfect, but it is something like that where, and the thought was that restricted free agents are guys that are looking to be restricted free agents negotiating with their team, negotiating extensions with their teams, would look at this year's restricted free agency class and be like, maybe I don't want to sign up for having to sign my deal in September or August or October, like right before the deadline to get into training camp. Maybe I just want to take the guaranteed, 4 years, $100 million instead.
Sure.
Tari probably wasn't going to get that. But
No, maybe one of the reasons he's going to enter restricted free agency. So as it stands now, clearly he's on the team for this upcoming season. He could very well be on the team next year playing on the qualifying offer and then enter restricted free agency.
Unrestricted,
in what, 27?
Yes.
Yes. He could be here for 2 more years. He could be here for 5 more years. We don't know. But it's now an open question as opposed to initially reported as a guarantee. And that's where we stand. As far as the starting lineup, I mentioned it before we went to break in the last segment. It is a lineup where Amen Thompson is, at least by height, your starting point guard. Who knows who will be handling the ball more? Will it be more of a hub-type deal where you're playing pick and roll like the Nuggets do, where Jamal Murray's considered the point guard? He's not really the point guard.
Yeah.
He plays off of Jokic. Is that what we're going to do with Şengün? Is he more of a hub like Jokic? Is Kevin Durant going to be a primary ball handler? Is he going to come off the actions that Şengün sets in motion? So as it stands, Kevin Durant's your starting shooting guard at 6'11". That's what he like. He doesn't want to be considered a 7-footer.
No, that is the funny part, is that this lineup is probably taller
than it actually reported,
heights.
But Kevin Durant prefers if you don't think of him as a 7-footer. Yes. So you've got Amen, Kevin Durant, Jabari is your 3, Şengün is your 4, Steven Adams is your 5. And we just talked about it quite a bit. Is this simply something that they're going to do matchup dependent, or is it something that will be who they are throughout? And at least to start, the Rockets are going giant. People are saying they're going big. No, they're not just going big. I don't remember a starting five this tall.
No, there's like a weird bubble Nuggets starting lineup
where they didn't have healthy.
It was like a tune-up game.
Yeah, it was like either a tune-up game or the end of the regular season. I forgot. I know what you're talking about. Where Bol Bol might have been considered the point guard because he had the best ball handling skills. Yeah. I remember that game.
Yeah, but I think the like cumulative inches, I think the Rockets are still like just ahead of that of that team. But yeah, it is going to be a huge team. We'll see what it looks like every night. I do think it'll change. It'll vary from night to night. Even just simply because like Steven Adams playing in a full season.
Are they inserting Capella in the games that Steven Adams doesn't play?
That's the interesting part. It's like, then is Capella the starter, or then do you just play a more normal? Like, do you just try to time up the Steven Adams maintenance games?
Sure.
With, when you play a team that plays a little bit smaller than the Thunder do, because the Thunder are also a pretty big team. Who will be out? Jalen Williams.
Not playing tonight.
Yeah, Jalen Williams out. I think it's residual rehab from the thumb surgery that he had after the final.
He talked about that thumb that he played with during the finals. We're talking about the impactful Jalen Williams. Yes. Well, that's insulting. But the more impactful Jalen Williams.
The one that scored 40 points in a
The one who game. They couldn't have won the finals without.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. J-A-L-E-N.
Honestly, for most people, the Jalen Williams
that you know.
Like, they have a different one.
They have two.
It was adorable, but now it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
One's a backup big.
Yeah, one, they were drafted in the same class, right? And one of them was from Santa Clara, and the other one,
Arkansas.
Arkansas. So you probably, a lot of people knew of the Arkansas Jalen Williams. Turns out the Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, much better than projected. I think he was a teens type lottery pick.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
He has certainly surpassed that that draft status. He won't be available, so that's good for the Rockets. Are they going to just insert Caruso into the starting lineup? I don't know how
they're going to do. From a OKC beat reported that OKC or that Caruso's ready to go. I don't know if that means he'll start, but
okay. So Jalen Williams, he did have off-season surgery on his right wrist, still progressing, but he won't be there. And that's good news for the Rockets. They try to get off to a good start. That'll be on NBC/Peacock. So it is the start of NBC's regular season coverage. And the Rockets will be part of their doubleheader. It'll be Golden State. There it is. There you go.
Basketball. Give me, give me.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have that little insert in there, that little remix when they start.
This is just saved under Round Ball Rock. Like, this is just in the system, what Round Ball Rock is.
Okay. Golden State and the Lakers is the second part of your doubleheader. No LeBron, who went through a bit of a cycle yesterday. I read some of it. Russell Westbrook was criticizing LeBron James in an Athletic article, and then I wake up from a nap, and Stephen A. has got shots for LeBron. Pretty much called him a faker, much like the article suggested Russell Westbrook thinks of LeBron. And, of course, we remember the confrontation at a game where LeBron came up to Stephen A. Smith and said, "Hey, don't talk about my family that way. I'm here as a dad." And Stephen A. had his thoughts on that. Pretty much said LeBron's a phony.
Do you think
as well.
Do you think that this was a little bit of a, like, hey, this might be the last NBA season that we get to, like, do some LeBron drive-bys?
I don't know if that's the case.
Not even drive-bys.
To start off the season that way, you got months to do it.
Yeah, he's not going to play till November.
Yeah, Stephen A. Smith went on a different platform and doing it. He was with Carmelo Anthony. Yeah, he's got old guy issues. He's with Stephen A. went on Carmelo Anthony's podcast. Yeah. He didn't do it on ESPN. He didn't do it on his own platform. But he did use the sit down with Carmelo, who was, you know, one of LeBron's friends, I think, to take his shots. And you know, LeBron, I guess, will be in the arena. I don't know if he'll be on the bench as an inactive. But hey, if you ain't playing, I guess it's time.
Yeah,
to get our licks in.
Will he be on the bench?
Will he sit there?
Because, in theory, having a sciatica problem, I can't imagine an NBA bench is like the most comfortable place to sit when you're 6'9" with a sciatica.
Probably not. I'm sure he has a.
Is he going to sit in the Phil Jackson like?
I think he might. He might. He might already do that when he's not playing. I'm not sure. I don't keep track of LeBron's seating arrangements when he's not playing. In fact, I don't watch Laker basketball that much if I don't have to be honest with you. They've been kind of not a real contender for a while now, even with the Luka acquisition. So there it is. We've got basketball back. We've got the basketball pettiness back. It's all here for us. And you know what? If the Texans keep it up, we've already said this could turn into a Rockets show.
Tankathon Mondays.
Tankathon Mondays and
Rockets
and Rockets basketball.
Weekend recap.
Yeah, we could do plenty of that. When we come back, we will do a little college football. We pushed back the misery index because we had Rockets and a lot of Texans to get to. We will do the misery index when we come back. We'll have a first-time representative. I probably can speak quite a bit about that first-time representative. We will have, well, actually two now that I look at the list. And we'll go into the SEC as well, and then we'll mention a couple Big 12 school and an American school. So the misery index may get stretched to 5 this time. So we'll get to that. But you know what? Let's go to break here. We'll come back with the misery index. But if you want to call in, the number is 713-780-3776. We have not talked any college football the first couple of days. We'll do that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
It all started Friday. You had two ranked teams go down in much different ways. Like Minnesota took apart Nebraska. Dylan Raiola back at it again. Matt Rhule at it again. We talked about it. Nebraska's ranked again.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Grand closing. That game probably didn't get most of the attention from college football fans. The other game going on that night was Miami against Louisville, formerly number two Miami, loses to Louisville. And as a Miami fan, I felt it early. And, of course, they scored in the first drive. But even the initial couple plays, they were missing tackles. Now, Brown, who was hampered, just think if he could actually – put more than three snaps together in a row. Isaac Brown, the running back from Louisville, what kind of day he would have had. But they were missing tackles early, and it wasn't the defense I had seen through the first five games of the season. And I thought, oh, this is going to be different. And then it kept getting different. Chris Bell's a good player. Miami secondary, who had been good all year, could do nothing with him. He just ran away from dudes on a couple of occasions. But Louisville scores early. Miami gets to a 3rd and 5, and I will say the Louisville player flopped, but it was a personal foul penalty that pushed him back to 3rd and 20. And when Louisville scores again, you're like, I wasn't thinking Miami couldn't win. I just thought this is going to be a long ball game.
Yeah.
You toss in the four picks from Carson Beck, and I would say, like, the fourth one is a bad decision. The first two on long balls, like, underthrown. I don't know if they're bad decisions, just underthrown. The third one, that's on fourth down. I can't even crush him for that. But four picks are four picks. And if you turn the ball over four times, and credit the Miami defense for this, they did not give a point on three of the, like the fourth one into the game. So they're not going to give a point there. But the first three, they didn't give up a point. And in fact, on the third one, they forced a fumble on the next play and set up a touchdown.
The third one was actually kind of good.
Yeah, it helped them out. So Louisville wins. Jeff Brohm is a good offensive coach.
And
the Miami players talked about how they showed them things they had not seen. That is the benefit of a bye week. Both teams came off a bye week, and Louisville pulled some things out of their bag that Miami could not prepare for, and it worked out. Got them out to an early lead, and they're able to hang on. They made some third down conversions that helped out. Their defense got of course, turned the ball over quite a bit. So Louisville's now ranked. Virginia's ranked. Miami's ranked, and Georgia Tech is ranked. So all of a sudden, the ACC has four ranked teams. And because of how things are set up, they don't all play each other. So there's a real scenario. And SMU, by the way, is undefeated in ACC play.
There's a chance that Miami doesn't play for the ACC title.
Simply because the only guarantee you have is kind of to go undefeated in conference, and now they don't have that in their back pocket.
And they have a weird thing where, like, they have a common loss. Like, the Louisville loss... And Louisville lost to
Virginia?
UVA,
and Miami doesn't play UVA.
Yeah, and so UVA might get the tiebreaker just off of, or it helps with the like common opponent win percentage.
Now, of course, UVA, who's one of the surprises of the season, has to go through there. Yeah,
that's why I'm not going full into this.
It's a long ways away, but you did lay it out where the team who through the first 5 weeks of the season may have had the best resume until Florida State kept falling apart. Shout out to them losing at Stanford. Losing at Stanford. Miami fans better not laugh too hard. Stanford's coming to town. So before you laugh, maybe win game. Win that game. So it is a messy ACC, but Miami makes their first appearance.
When is it not a messy ACC?
It always is. And you're on your Friday night. You're feeling pretty good. You're coming off a bye, and you are a double-digit favorite. And I can't, you know what? It would be easy for me to blame Mario. I can't even really blame him.
It
wasn't really a Mario game. Your quarterback throws four picks. You should lose the game. And even with a chance to tie or win, he throws the final one. I can't even crush Mario for it.
It was like they got out coached, but they got out coached by an offensive schemer.
And it was early.
Yeah.
Like he got out to the lead early, but the defense rallied. They made enough plays so you could be at a point where if your quarterback wasn't awful, you win the game.
Yeah, it's less about the like points you gave up off those turnovers and more about the points
you don't score. Yeah.
But like you said, two of them are fourth down, the last one in the game. It's not like a cat. Like people obviously want to dunk on Carson Beck.
He has a personality and face that gets people to dunk on him.
Yes. I get it, but like this game particularly, like he didn't play well. It wasn't. I mean, you laid it out. It wasn't like an insane.
Yeah, I mean,
like what is he doing?
Bad throw on a couple plays, and of course, things turn out differently. Maybe Malachi Toney doesn't get caught from behind. You on that screen, you score a touchdown instead of kicking a field goal. A lot of things happen, but it all came together. Credit Louisville for what they accomplished. And, of course, because of all the work Miami has done to start the year, they're still in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
As it's been pointed out, because of the number of teams who make the playoff, it's more like the NFL, where particularly if you lose in the middle of the year, it doesn't kill you. You got enough games. And if you go, like if they go 11-1 into the ACC title game and win it, they're making the playoff and maybe.
They're probably a top four seed.
They're going to be a top four seed. So, and which means they could possibly play a quarterfinal in the Orange Bowl, which is their home stadium, go to a neutral site, and then play the national title at home. That seemed like a clear path before the loss. It's still something they can accomplish. Just got to go win your games. Next up on the misery index, and trust me, while I am calmer and reasonable today.
Friday night
into Saturday, I was miserable. And mostly because I can't even chalk it up. Oh, that's Mario being Mario.
Yeah,
I couldn't even blame him.
It's a loss that that's why I'm kind of not crushing him. Is that it's a weird thing to say. It's like it's a normal loss that a top five team, top 10 team in the country has. Yeah. Like the only weird part is that it was at home, but also you know it's not like Coral Gables or no Miami Gardens is like a hornet's nest of like how the hell did you go into Hard Rock Stadium and beat the game.
Now like, they had not lost a game at home since they lost to Louisville in 2023. So they had played well, but that's mostly because the team was good and they had Cam Ward. Not that because it's such a hard place to play. It gets up for really big games. The Louisville game wasn't that
on a Friday night.
On a Friday night, high school football is big in South Florida. So yeah, all the things played a part. Let's move to the Big 12. Texas Tech takes their first loss.
Yeah,
a team who we had talked about as one of the more maybe the best Big 12 team, and probably still is. But they go into Arizona State. It was a ball game where Arizona State controlled it, and then Texas Tech fought back. And then they gave up the drive. They gave up a drive late. And you credit Arizona State. They got Sam Levitt back. And, boy, no matter how things look, at least he's not Jeff Sims. You certainly have a shot when it's Sam Levitt and not Jeff Sims. He wasn't great. But on that final drive, you love having a talented, experienced quarterback to fight back and not let the Texas Tech comeback crush you. And they find a way. So undefeated Texas Tech goes down in Tempe.
I know that they, for conference play, like they don't have like a committee that selects the top two teams to play in Arlington.
Yeah.
Arizona State should probably get some.
Hey, the Cougs are just.
No, they should get some Jeff Sims started a game for
leeway. Jeff Sims leeway.
like their loss when they had to start Jeff Sims.
Yeah,
like,
I get it. I gotcha.
You get some forgiveness there. Like, is there a team that has that? No, I guess there's not really a team at the top that has that. But you'll see it every once in a while. Like the John Mateer thing, I guess. It's like if John Mateer missed the Texas game and they lost. OU would have been like, well, they didn't have their starting quarterback.
Sure.
I feel like Arizona State, they're probably not going to be in a spot to where they have an at-large spot, I guess, that they run the table. They should get some, like, they did have to start Jeff Sims for a week.
Hey, it's not, look, you've seen him. You've seen him for years.
It should count as like a half loss.
What do you think we're capable of?
They should win a tiebreaker, no matter what.
The Jeff Sims tiebreaker?
Yes.
I would buy it. I would buy it.
Unless it's against the Cougs. Then the Cougs obviously should
And the Cougs get to play the Arizona State this Saturday. So we'll see the Cougs and see if they can elevate themselves. Yeah. We didn't talk about them.
Beat them on hard mode.
Yeah. They got Sam Levitt. They got to go into Tempe night game. The Cougs on ESPN2 will go into Arizona State, see if they can get a win. The Cougs had a nice win over Arizona State's rival.
Yeah.
They had a lead. Of course, Arizona fought back, and the Cougs eventually kicked the game with field goal with no time left.
Hard to win the Big 12.
Thank you. We're all Michael Taff. Yes.
It's hard to win the ACC. It's hard to win
It's hard to win everywhere.
Smile.
Yes. Just hey, media, cut it out. What's with all the down faces?
Smile.
Hey, Jeff Ketchum. Jeff Ketchum, wipe that smirk off your face and smile.
Hey, you should really smile more, Jeff Ketchum.
Yeah, it's fine to say it to Jeff, but not to Jane. Don't tell a woman to smile, everybody. All right, let's move to a game that's not really close to our hearts. It's close to one of our listeners. LSU, you're on the list for losing to Vanderbilt. It's not an awful loss.
No.
But when you're LSU and you lose to Vanderbilt, who is a really good team, it's still a problem for Brian Kelly
and
the fan base.
I think the fact that it's not an awful loss is bad for Brian Kelly. Like, some of the credit goes to Vanderbilt.
Gotcha.
But at the end of the day, like, the fact that we're not really like, oh my God, LSU lost to Vanderbilt.
But we wouldn't have thought if Vanderbilt had beaten Alabama and Tuscaloosa, I would have said bad loss for DeBoer because it happened 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But I get your point. LSU isn't at a level where losing to Vanderbilt is surprising to anyone.
I expected them to lose to Vanderbilt.
On the road in Nashville. Yeah, that's an expected loss.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Now, we set it up where, before the game, we talked about it. How many points would LSU have to score?
Yep. They proved us wrong.
Yeah. Like, we didn't think LSU, like, the defense had to hold Vanderbilt to 21. They didn't and still lost.
But they got 24. 24 fat ones for you.
Yeah, we thought to win a game.
Haters wrote them off.
Yeah, we thought.
Garrett Nussmeier didn't write back.
We thought for them to win a game, they'd have to hold Vanderbilt to 21 points. They scored 24 and still lost. Because,
you know what? Here's one more for you.
Yeah, because Diego Pavia in the run game, Vanderbilt's run game as a whole, made the plays. I don't know if Pavia should be doing the Heisman post, but
I think he should. He's good enough to where it's not completely ridiculous.
Yeah. And so LSU remains on or gets put on the list because now we get into the mode of we got to fire this guy.
Well, yeah, and you get A&M
and you can't fire him yet.
Next two games.
Yeah, so you look at the rest of your schedule and you very well could be out of the playoff picture before you get into mid-November. Yeah. So that is a problem for them. Particularly when one of your losses is to Vanderbilt. And I mention this in passing because of the potential for a big group of five game. Well, Memphis doesn't allow it. USF took care of their business. Memphis gets beat by Trent Dilfer-less UAB, which may have made them more dangerous, to be honest with you. I think we might have discussed it. UAB, who fired Trent Dilfer, yes, that Trent Dilfer, beats Memphis. Memphis was in the top 20, or top 25 at least. They were one of the real contenders for the group of five berth. And maybe this Saturday's game against USF would have determined that. They might have seen each other in the conference title game. But this was going to be maybe one of two games that would have set up the winner for a chance to make the playoff. Instead, Memphis now has to become a bit of a spoiler to keep themselves in the race. Because Navy still exists. And Navy's 4-0 in conference, 6-0 overall. Tulane is 3-0. So the American is wide open like a lot of conferences are. But we could have had a top 25 matchup and maybe a playoff eliminator. Instead, we get Memphis licking their wounds. So I think when you lose to UAB at home, you feel pretty bad. You feel pretty bad. Excuse me, they lost on the road, but even still. You lose to UAB, a team that was 2-4 at the time. But apparently you fire your coach, things work out. You fire a name brand head coach, things work out. Deshaun Foster, gone. UCLA can't stop winning. Trent Dilfer, gone. Yeah. UAB wins. So maybe that's the deal.
Coach that maybe got the job for other reasons.
Than just being a coach.
Yes.
Like legendary status at the school in Deshaun Foster's case.
Or was on ESPN.
And ex-NFL quarterback for UAB when it comes to Trent Dilfer.
Okay.
Fire that guy. Follow the unqualified guy. And look at that. You put a more qualified guy in the position and you start winning games.
I think we cracked it.
Yeah.
I think we
get
cracked
the unqualified guy out of there. Shout out to Tim Skipper, who no one knows who his name is because everyone's talking about the Neuheisel, the Jerry Neuheisel.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the head coach here.
Yeah.
You don't call plays. Sorry, Tim Skipper, who we'll see where he lands after this year because it feels like they're just going to give that job to Jerry Neuheisel if they keep winning.
That would be so messed up.
Yeah. The guy who decided to give him the job misses out. Chris, you got to go quick. Sean, play the music, but I'll get to you here. Chris, you held. What's up?
Hey, it's Tom Dark Chris, but a couple questions. How are those analytics working out for the Texans after this game? And does Michael Carroll still cuck for everything Marvel? Thanks, bye.
Wow. No, ask that question to Michael Carroll on Friday. I don't know if he's going to appreciate the question, but at least I'll ask it of him. You'll get your answer on Friday. As far as the analytics, it didn't appear the Texans lean into analytics because they do a lot of dumb things, and analytics is supposed to be for smart people. Look, that game was awful, but the Texans against good teams are awful, and it showed itself. At least not good, and they were particularly not good last night. All right, we're done for the day, but before we say goodbye, Sean Mapes is going to tell you about Prize Picks.
Yes, Prize Picks, America's number one daily fantasy sports app, and we've been talking about the Rockets season. Well, it's finally tipping off here tonight, and you can make some money watching your Rockets play a little bit of basketball in OKC. I feel like you have to. It's his first night as a Rocket. Everyone's super excited that he is a Rocket. Got to go more on Kevin Durant, 23.5 points. Like we talked about, Jalen Williams is out. He's a good wing defender. So the OKC defense will take a little bit of a step back from what we've seen in the past. You also got a max discount for one of Durant's former teammates, Stephen Curry. In the late game, he can go more than half a point and you win some money. So boom, pair up the old 2017-19 Warrior teammates and you can win three times your money just like that on Prize Picks. Really, you just need Stephen Curry to show up to the arena on time and wear a jersey and shoot it a couple times, and you need Kevin Durant to score 24 points, and you can start the season off right with a win, even if the Rockets maybe don't win. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Just download the Prize Picks app today. Use promo code MAPES when you sign up to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's promo code MAPES on Prize Picks to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right.